drives him a-fishing. In the summer of the year 1782, I, David Llewellyn, of Newton Nottage, fisherman, an old sailor, was in great distress and trouble, more than I like to tell you. My dear wife, a faithful partner for 28 years, in spite of a very quick temper, was lately gone to a better world, and I missed her tongue and her sharp lookout at almost every corner. Also my son, as fine a seaman as ever went aloft, after helping Lord Rodney to his great victory over Grass the Frenchman, had been lost in a prize ship called the Tonner, of 54 guns and 500 crapos, which sank with all hands on her way home to Spithead, under Admiral Graves. His young wife, who had been sent to us to see to, with his blessing, no sooner heard of this sad affair, as in the Gazette reported, and his pay that week stopped on her, but she fell into untimely travail, and was dead ere morning. So I buried my wife and daughter-in-law, and lost all chance to bury my son between two bridgend market days. Now, this is not very much, of course, compared with the troubles some people have, but I had not been used to this matter, except in case of a messmate, and so I was greatly broken down, and found my eyes so weak of a morning that I would not be seen out of doors almost. The only one now to keep a stir or sound of life in my little cottage, which faces to the churchyard, was my orphan grandchild, Bunny, daughter of my son just drowned, and his only child that we knew of. Bunny was a rare, strong lass, 5 years old about then, I think. A stout and hearty feeding child, able to chew every bit of her victuals, and mounting a fine, rosy colour, and eyes as black as Archangel Pitch. One day, when I was moping there, all abroad about my bearings, and no better than water ballasted, the while I looked at my wife's new broom, now carrying cobweb trysails, this little bunny came up to me, as if she had a boarding pike, and sprang into the netting hammocks of the best black coat I wore. "Granda," she said, and looked to know in what way I would look at her. "Granda, I must have something more to eat." "Something more to eat," I cried, almost with some astonishment. Well, as I knew her appetite, for the child had eaten a barley loaf and two pig's feet and a dogfish. "Yes, more Bexfass, Granda." And though she had not the words to tell, she put her hands in a way that showed me she ought to have more solid food. I could not help looking sadly at her, proud as I was of her appetite. But recovering in a minute or two, I put a good face upon it. "My dear, and you shall have more," I said. "Only take your feet out of my pocket. Little heart have I for fishing, God knows. But a fishing I will go this day, if Mother Jones will see to you." For I could not leave her alone quite yet, although she was a brave little maid, and no fire now was burning. But within a child's trot from my door, and down toward the sandhills, was that famous ancient well of which I spoke just now, dedicated to St. John the Baptist, where they used to scourge themselves. The village church stood here, they say, before the inroad of the sand, and the water was counted holy. How that may be, I do not know, but the well is very handy. It has a little grey, round tower of stone domed over the heart of it, to which a covered way goes down, with shallow steps irregular. If it were not for this plan, the sand would whelm the whole of it over, even as it has overwhelmed all the departure of the spring, and the cottages once surrounding it. Down these steps the children go, each with a little brown pitcher, holding hands and groping at the sides as they begin to feel darker. And what with the sand beneath their feet, and the narrowing of the roof above, and the shadows moving round them, and the doubt where the water begins or ends, which nobody knows at any time, it is much but what some little maid tumbles in, and the rest have to pull her out again. For this well has puzzled all the country, and all the men of great learning, being as full of contrariety as a maiden courted. It comes and goes in a manner against the coming and going of the sea, which is only half a mile from it. And twice in a day it is many feet deep, and again not as many inches. and the water is so crystal clear that down in the dark, it is like a dream. Some people say that John the Baptist had nothing to do with the making of it, because it was made before his time by the ancient family of de Sandford, who once owned all the manors here. In this, however, I place no faith, having read my Bible to better purpose than to believe that John Baptist was the sort of man to claim anything, least of all any water, unless he came honestly by it. In either case, it is very pretty to see the children round the entrance on a summer afternoon when they are sent for water. They are all a little afraid of it, partly because of its maker's name, and his having his head on a charger, and partly on account of its curious ways, the sand coming out of its nostrils when first it begins to flow. That day with which I begin my story, Mrs. Jones was good enough to take charge of little Bunny, and after getting ready to start, I set the thong of our latch inside so that none but neighbours who knew the trick could enter our little cottage, or rather, mine, I should say now. And thus, with conger rod and prawn net, and a long pole for the bass, and a junk of pressed tobacco, and a lump of barley bread, and a maybird stuffed with onions just to refine the fishiness, away I set for a long short day upon as dainty a summer morn as ever shone out of the heavens. Fisherman Davy, as they call me, all around our parts, was 50 and 2 years of age, I believe, that very same July, and with all my heart I wish that he were as young this very day, for I never have found such call to enter into the affairs of another world as to forget my business here, or press upon Providence impatiently for a more heavenly state of things. People may call me worldly-minded for cherishing such a view of this earth, and perhaps it is not right of me. However, I can put up with it, and be in no unkindly haste to say goodbye to my neighbours, for to my mind, such a state of seeking, as many amongst us do even boast of, is, unless in a bad cough or a perilous calenture, a certain proof of curiosity displeasing to our Maker, and I might even say of fickleness, degrading to a true Briton. The sun came down upon my head, so that I thought of bygone days, when I served under Captain Howe, or Sir Edward Hawke, and used to stroll away upon leave, with 50 jacks ashore, at Naples, or in Bermudas, or wherever the luck might happen. Now, however, was no time for me to think of strolling, because I could no longer live at the expense of the government, which is the highest luck of all, and full of noble dignity. Things were come to such a push that I must either work or starve, and could I but recall the past, I would stroll less in the days gone by. A pension of 1 8d. for the weeks I was alive, being in right of a heavy wound in capture of the Bellona, Frenchman of 32 guns, by His Majesty's frigate Vesta, under Captain Hood, was all I had to hold on by, in support of myself and Bunny, except the slippery fish that come and go as Providence orders them. She had sailed from Martinique, and luckily we fell in with her, and I never shall forget the fun and the 5 hours at close quarters. We could see the powder on the other fellows' faces while they were taking their guns at us, and we showed them, with a slap, our noses, which they never contrived to hit. She carried heavier metal than ours, and had 60 more men to work it, and therefore we were obliged at last to capture her by boarding. I, like a fool, was the first that leapt into her mizzen chains, without looking before me, as ought to have been. The Frenchman came too fast upon me, and gave me more than I bargained for. Thus it happened that I fell off, in the very prime of life and strength, from an able-bodied seaman and captain of the foretop, to a sort of lurcher along shore, and a man who must get his own living with nets and rods and such like. That very beautiful fight took place in the year 1759, before I was 30 years old, and before his present most gracious majesty came to the throne of England, and inasmuch as a villainous Frenchman made at me with a cutlash and a power of blue oaths, taking a nasty advantage of me while I was yet entangled, and thumped in with 3 of my ribs before a kind providence enabled me to relieve him of his head at a blow, I was discharged and we came to Spithead with an excellent character in a silk bag and a considerable tightness of breathing and leave to beg my way home again. Now I had not the smallest meaning to enter into any of these particulars about myself, especially as my story must be all about other people, beautiful maidens and fine young men, and several of the prime gentry. But as I have written it, so let it stay, because perhaps, after all, it is well that people should have some little knowledge of the man they have to deal with, and learn that his character and position are a long way above all attempt at deceit. To come back once again, if you please, to that very hot day of July 1782, whence I mean to depart no more until I have fully done with it, both from the state of the moon I knew, and from the neap when my wife went off, that the top of the spring was likely to be in the dusk of that same evening. At first I had thought of going down straight below us to Newton Bay, and pedalling over the black rocks towards the Ogmore River, some 2 miles to the east of us, but the bright sun gave me more enterprise, and remembering how the tide would ebb, also how low my pocket was, I felt myself bound in honour to Bunny to make a real push for it, and thoroughly search the conger holes and the lobster ledges, which are the best on all our coast, round about Pooltarvan, and down below the old house at Scare.